What happens when a woman looks for three men? One to talk to, one for sex, and one for practical work. We'll find out on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes, as always, those are my babies. Mwah. Thanks for getting daddy started. Author and love coach Pauline Middleton is with us today, and I'm curious, why challenge the current dating paradigm?
Well, you know, Frank, I'm not the only one challenging it.
Yeah, you're right about
that. If you read in the news and if you have some friends, I gather some of them have divorced each other. Mm. Some of them may even have been unfaithful to each other. And quite a number of people are struggling to make love work the way that they want it to work. So at some point, I figured, well, maybe we should try to look at it in a completely different manner. And that's what I did.
What led you to the strategy that you put together?
Well, actually, I decided to make a profile on a dating site online. And there they ask you a lot of questions about this and that, and you need to fill in many different, you know, information about yourself. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And then when I was sitting there, I was looking at, okay, well, do I really need all this? I mean, it's so complicated. Do I really need a man? What good is a man in my life? And then I started making a list, and I thought there would maybe be three or four points on this list. And then I could sort of say, okay, I can maybe live without this. Mm-hmm. And then before I knew it, there were 26 different areas.
Wow.
I was like, oh, okay, well, I can't live without all of this. And then I regrouped them, and I found out that the three most important areas for me was, you know, I like a guy to talk with, to discuss life and love and politics and so on. Mm-hmm. I liked for, you know, me and a partner to cooperate about practical stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I also wanted a sex partner. Mm-hmm. And then when I was sitting there looking at it, I figured, hey, this is actually also three of the areas where many people go wrong and where I had gone wrong in my previous relationships. So I figured, why don't I try to separate my needs and look for three men, a guy to talk to, a lover, and a handyman, and then see where it goes wrong.
What made you
so
think,
I did.
What made you think something was wrong? How did you kind of put the tag, something went wrong in your previous relationships? How was it wrong to you?
It
well,
ended.
I'd been married to the father of my daughter, mm-hmm. and we just were not able to have a well-functioning relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, we met each other and got pregnant quite quickly after 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then after I was pregnant, you know, we started finding out who we really were. Mm-hmm. So I could see that I had actually been very much into this romantic dream world of building mm-hmm. castles in my head. And I had not been very realistic, actually looking at the guy ahead of me. Mm-hmm. So then when I divorced him, I met a new guy who was the complete opposite of my ex-husband. Mm-hmm. And then after a year, he left me. So I was like, wow, you know, I can't make it work with a guy whose nature is very different from mine. And I cannot make it work with a guy whose nature is actually quite similar to mine. So is there something wrong with me or is it love? And I decided it was love. Tried to figure out a new way of doing it.
And you said you said two things that raised questions for me. One, you said you have a child. How old were you when you got pregnant or when you had your daughter?
I was 34.
34. So you weren't 20.
She was a mature woman.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
And you said you divorced him. You didn't say you all divorced. So give me a little bit of a story there. Why would you say one versus the other? Just I'm curious as to how that works.
Well, we were together for 6 years, mm-hmm. and we met each other actually in London, where he was living at the time, and then he moved back to Denmark. I had an apartment there and so on, and we moved in together. And very quickly, I got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then, so it was like, okay, now we actually start our relationship by me becoming pregnant 2 weeks after we moved in together. Mm. So before that, we had sort of a long distance relationship for 6 months.
Okay.
So and you know, when you move in together, you start seeing each other in quite a different manner than when you have when you are living in different countries or even living apart.
Right.
So, and what I found out was that he had actually escaped Denmark because he had conflicts with his family, with friends. He had been fired. He had dropped out of the film school. You know, there were many different major elements that appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at him and I said, well, you know, I think this guy, what he really needs is a lot of love and care. And, you know, I just want to take care of this guy who's now going to be the dad of my child.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried. And I really tried. And I found a new place for us to live. And I tried to help him find a job. And I tried to help him come to terms with his family. And you know, after 6 years, I attended this women's evening, you know, where women exchange experiences and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a woman there who was dealing with an American author called Byron Katie.
I know Byron Katie.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's great.
I guess you know her. Okay.
Yes.
And she has four questions that you are asked.
Is it true?
And, you know, I presented myself as the test person for this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And then the woman asked me these four questions about my marriage. And I was like, you know, that made me realize what I was living in was permanent. You know, mm-hmm. he had actually not changed a lot over those 6 years. He had changed a wee bit. And she said to me, that's how much he's going to be able to change looking mm-hmm. forward. And then I just knew right there, okay, we're going to divorce because I cannot live with the number of conflicts this guy has and with the refusal of seeing his own responsibility in these conflicts and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what the four questions were?
It boils down to, is it true?
It very much deals with, you know, that you can think something about somebody else, but do you really know whether it's true or not?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about projection, you know, it's very much about, you know, don't tell yourself things that you don't really know, because it may be true and it may not be true.
Mm-hmm.
So go out and verify things, and then you will become much wiser about what is happening.
Her Hallmark classic book is Loving What Is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you read it?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. No. I know who she is, and I've seen her name, and I've told myself I was going to read her stuff, but I cruised through a book of hers at the bookstore once, but it didn't,
mm-hmm.
you know, like that.
The book, she'll tell you, the book is Loving What Is. It's not even, I mean, if you're looking at something else before that, it's
better to start there.
Start at the heart.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Well,
nice.
And I mean that herself, her personal story is also quite amazing because she was, you know, in a hospital, a mental hospital, and feeling really, really bad for years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Until all of a sudden she found out that, okay, this that I think is real may not be real at all.
That's right.
And I don't know. I don't remember how she got that insight, but then her whole system is based on that.
She said she was laying on the, she had fell out or passed out on the floor in her bathroom and was just in a bad place. And she began to ask herself these questions. And you know, she's gone on to change lives.
No question.
Yeah, she really has. You know, and what she gave me was that I realized, okay, she said to me, you know, afterwards I went up to her and I asked her, well, you know, there was a number of things the matter with my husband. You know, there are a number of things I'm very dissatisfied with. And she asked me what it was. And I said, well, you know, he has conflicts with everybody and he keeps getting fired from jobs and so on. And then she looked at me and then she said, well, you know, those things are not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
You must love him the way he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at her and I was completely flabbergasted because I couldn't.
Yeah. And the more you hold on to, whatever your story is, the more pain you're going to have is ultimately what she's. So,
okay.
Welcome
to. In that sense, I would also say it was liberating to see this, because in that sense, like you were saying, I could continue to hold on to my misery, or I could say, okay, this has got to stop because it's making me feel so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided the last thing and went back home and told him I wanted a divorce.
Mm-hmm. And are you guys still in touch as you have a child together?
Well, you know, when you have a child, you need to be. But yeah. It has not been easy because he was really, you know, angry with me for wanting a divorce. And mm-hmm. he still is, even mm-hmm. though it's now 15 years ago.
Wow. I've heard that it at the 7-year point is when it gets a little easier to deal with an ex, particularly yeah. when the ex initiated the breakup.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to say what my experience has been.
Onward.
But but I hear you. I hear you. Welcome to Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create loving and flexible parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us. And if via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get the show each week. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please give us a favorable iTunes rating and please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so please help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my super duper beautiful co-host, Nancy Goldring, the consummate generalist.
Hi, Frank.
How are you?
I'm great.
You are great. Yes, you are.
Yes, I'm in fine spirits this morning.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Today's guest decided after a divorce and a failed dating relationship to figure out where the breakdown was. Was it in the sex department? Was it in the ability to talk and communicate? Or was it in her expectations that he'd be able to fix things with his hands? To find out the answer, she decided to silo the three questions and characteristics into three different men. Yep. She decided to, shall we say, date three men at once. One time. Yep. One in each category, and she's got a story to tell. So, if you, like me, want to know if men were able to openly say that they simply wanted to have sex, what communication challenges she discovered that exist between men and women, and whether she was able to find a handyman that she did not have sex with, then stay tuned. As your Frank Relationship team talks with the author of One Woman, Three Men, Pauline Middleton. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
But before we, am I saying your name right, Pauline?
Yeah, or Pauline.
Okay.
You know, just the American way, like with an A.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay.
Before we get too deep into the subject matter that we've already really touched on, I want to check in and see what's going on in the news. I don't want you to be bashful. Please weigh in with your thoughts on whatever comes. Nancy, you got something for me today?
That beats what we have? No.
That beats what I have.
Oh, excuse me.
All right. Pauline, you got anything in the news interesting on the relationship end? Okay.
Well, not really off the top of my head.
All right. I got something.
Yeah,
I
have something, but I don't think it really, it's not going to work. Go ahead.
1 in 5 youth lose sleep over social media.
Absolutely. Youth?
Yeah.
Please. Can you remember when you were, what, somewhere between 13 and beyond, and it's like, you know, you got to connect with your friends around the clock if you can, and now you can be connected. Oh, I hear people saying all the time, I had to take his phone. He was up half the night. He wouldn't get up the next morning because he was using that phone, playing games, texting friends. What?
Mm-hmm. I can remember wanting to be well-liked and I guess caring about the way I was perceived and I, yeah, that was me in high school, and
I can easily see how now, and then you had a break, because if you weren't on the phone with someone, you couldn't, you know, if you weren't on the phone, you weren't connected.
Right.
Or if you weren't at school, you weren't connected. So
right.
there was times when you were home where you were just not connected to your school community, to the social community.
You were with your family.
Yeah, but now you're connected. You can be connected all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I take my son's phone sometime. Yeah, so I can relate.
Yeah.
How long is your daughter?
Well, also because, I mean, nowhere in society where we are trained to actually administer that freedom
yeah.
or that communication possibility, you know, it's just there.
Right.
And because it's there, it seems like, okay, we're also able to manage it. But and my daughter is 19,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, you know, I have to respect that she's now grown up.
Uh-huh.
But she says to me every now and then, oh, Mom, now I need to go offline. Because it's too much, you know, it's taking all my time.
That's great.
And I'm like, yeah, it is.
And what was it for her when she was, let's say, 14, 15?
Yeah, well, she had the same issues with this as many other people that age.
Mm-hmm.
The other day I read in the New York Times that there is, they've made an analysis of people in their 20s. And they find that a lot of the people in their 20s are not eager to actually become responsible adults.
Mm-hmm.
So they're creating now a sociological new term called pre-adults. And that's people in their 20s, because it's not until they reach late 20s or 30s that they actually start assuming responsibility for their financial situation and their job and so on.
Mm.
I thought that was quite interesting. And that may also be, you know, that's another thing related to this taking responsibility of your time or your communication pattern or, you know, taking responsibility. I think there is a challenge for young people today.
Sounds like a challenge for the parents. Now your kids are not going to be around until they're maybe 18 to 22. They're going to be around until maybe they're 30.
Yes.
I as a parent,
yikes.
I don't really have a problem with my children continuing to live with me after 18 or 22, as long as they are,
productive members of society.
Yeah, as long as they're not laying around the house just watching television, I don't have a problem with that. In fact, I prefer for them not to have to spin their wheels, shall we say, having to get a place. And spend X amount of money to live,
and then come back home.
I mean, they can contribute to my household. I mean, they, you know, if they have a room, they can, you know, give a couple hundred bucks every month, just to. And I do require that, because, and mind you, I don't have a child that fits that bill yet. I do have family members that live with me that I require to contribute to the house.
Sure.
And because I feel like. Otherwise, you're dead weight. And I have a fundamental issue with anyone not contributing. You know, it's like being in a boat and not helping to paddle.
Right.
You know, I don't want the people close to me to want that for themselves, if that's, you know, if that's reasonable.
Hmm.
Does your daughter live with you?
I think the article, the link I found it through was dealing with the fact that parents now call here the university professors, saying that, you know, I don't understand the grade that my son got or that my daughter got. You know, the parents are interfering even at university level.
Interesting.
And that was, you know, different from earlier on when once you're in university, you're by yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I have news for you. I have a friend who worked for a top-tier corporation, and she was in human resources. And she said it was not uncommon for her to be in a conversation with a potential hire's parents about his compensation and benefits package. Yes. I was like, are you serious? She said many times. I was blown away.
I'm not quite sure I applaud to that.
Yeah.
You know, I would not.
I mean, I can see going home and consulting your parents and saying, hey, you know, okay, I got this great job and they've offered me this. What do you think? But to actually have my employer speak with my parents, that's That's out of hand. Maybe that's generational, but she said it was absolutely not uncommon to hear from these kids' parents.
What age would you say about that was? Because I don't have a real problem with that.
I mean, you figure these are kids coming out of college, and if their parents have been running the show for them, navigating the events of their lives, the question is, when do you cut ties? What you got, Jeff? Yeah.
I disagree, Frank. A kid's going to get a job, they're on their own. I'm not hiring the parents. If I'm an employer, I'm hiring that person.
Right.
They should be mature enough and professional enough to do the gig on their own.
Or to negotiate the gig.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that they're doing, it's negotiating. It's almost like having a consultant. It just happens to be your mom. Or your dad.
Well, it is. It is absolutely having a consultant. And I can see how a parent providing some level of wisdom. And I mean, you did say you could see them going home and talking to, but not actually talking
to the employer.
I mean,
where do you draw the line?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I see what you guys are saying. It seems as though to bring in as much wisdom as you can. I mean, what if it were your lawyer? I mean, it happens. If you're talking about company to company, or if you're talking about a high-level executive, it would not be uncommon to have your lawyer with you in negotiations about something like that.
But not your mommy.
Just don't. Well, if your mom's a lawyer, just make sure
that's,
you
that's
don't.
Different.
My
kids are grown. Any professional decision they've made, they've come home and discussed it with us. Come home.
Sure.
I'm not talking to the employer or my daughter.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen.
That's part of letting her be her own.
Well,
woman.
Because also once they get employed, let's say they have a conflict with somebody at work, is mom going to come in and help them solve the conflict?
Right.
You know, I mean, where does it end? I mean, or where does their own responsibility start?
Right.
So.
What is there a time when having someone to, I mean, and any, this could be the case with anybody. Is there a point where having someone to work with a person, let's say Nancy, you and I had a conflict and maybe and let's say you had a daughter who was around and said and she was maybe a go-between or something like that, where she and I were able to connect on one level and have some level of understanding, and she was like, I'll talk to mom. Oh, is that bad?
It's still not your employer.
Yes, it is.
Oh, you mean in this situation, I'll talk to mom.
And if it were actually effective, where her talking to you could get you to see some things that I couldn't get you to see in you and I talking.
Yeah, I mean, that's legit, but that's not the same as having your parents negotiate your hiring package. You can't get around that. And quite frankly, I want to know if all these men know that Pauline has all these men. I'm over this other thing.
Okay. All right.
Well, actually, I can also start by relating a bit this to my daughter, because I was thinking about this when I was dating three men. She was 12 at the time.
Oh.
So I was wondering, should I tell her about it? And I figured, no, this is a grown-up issue. Mm-hmm. So every second week she was with her dad, so I would just be, you know, seeing these guys when she was not there.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And then when the book came out that I wrote, you know, I was like, oh, what am I going to say now? Mm. And then once again, I decided to tell her, this is a grown-up issue. Don't feel you need to have an opinion about it, and I don't want you to watch any of the programs that I'm in or read any of the interviews. You know, this is not for you right now. Once you're grown up, you're welcome to read the book, but not now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's important to distinguish, now you're a child, now you're a teenager, and now you're actually a grown up. Because people also tend to live up to expectations. So if there are no expectations, what can you live up to? Nothing, you know. So I don't think that children should handle grown up conflicts.
Now, here's an interesting piece. This and is interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
It touches on my book. Okay, so my book is How to Gracefully Exit a Relationship, and in that book, one of the things that I discuss is keeping the children, doing your best to keep the children out of the acrimony that may have, that may be amiss as a result of you guys breaking up. Don't try to bring the kids into it. Do when you talk to the children about the breakup, talk together. Don't blame the other. Just basically, for the most part, just saying our relationship isn't working. So me and your other parent we're splitting and we love you. Not bringing them into the details. That said, Pauline, how did you work the dating? So your ex undoubtedly knew what you were doing or knew about the book, saw you on the, if you didn't tell him directly, saw you on the the television
news
or whatever have you, but he probably knew what you were doing. How did you negotiate with him so that he would not talk to her about it and badmouth you and say your mother's a this or that and the other, that sort of thing?
Well, first of all, he was already bad-mouthing me, ever since we got divorced.
Uh-huh.
And in front of her and so on. And I tried to tell him how bad it was for her and so on. But he was so angry with me mm-hmm. for having stopped the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, once you go on a dating site with other singles, I mean, he could have been there. But this was a dating site for people with a third year, with an education, with at least a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have a college degree, so I knew I wasn't going to meet him there.
Uh-huh.
And then what you do on a dating site, people don't really know. My married friends also didn't know about it. And in the beginning, I didn't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. I was just saying, okay, let me see if this works. Can I actually date three men? Mm-hmm. What are they going to say? What's the reaction going to be? In the beginning, I just wanted me to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, when the book came out and I was on TV and so on, then he found out. But by then it was it was too late.
Too late, right.
And he asked my daughter about it. And she said, well, I don't know. It's one of Mom's projects. That's all she said. And that was fine.
Yeah.
So, Pauline, is this is this an open relationship? Is it polyamory when you... How does this work? Do all three men know they exist in your life? And
yeah, well, it's neither an open relationship or polyamory because those are defined in different manners. What I did was that since I posted this profile looking for three men, they all knew that there was somebody else except them.
Okay.
But the interesting thing was that each of them tried to outmaneuver the other guys.
How so?
Men can be somewhat competitive, at least some men can.
Right.
And the men I dated definitely were. They were like, a number of them were saying, well, is he better than me now, this talker you're meeting with? Or how about the guy in bed? What does it take for me to replace him?
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing for me was that I had to stand by my needs, mm-hmm. and I got a very positive reaction from the men to that. And that was a surprise
mm-hmm.
because they said, oh, it's so good to meet a woman who knows what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh,
yes.
Is it? Why is
yes.
that? And then they said, well, because then I can give you what you want. Then you become happy. Then you like me. Then everything is good.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, okay. So I found out that communication about what you want in a relationship is really, really important. Don't take for granted that he may want the same thing as you or that he can understand or know how you feel, no matter how much in love you are. Men, we can't guess each other's needs.
Were you open to discovering needs that you were not aware of? So you had those three silos. What if there was something you discovered that you did not account for? Were you open to that?
Yeah, sure. And what I was challenged at already after a couple of weeks, and a couple of dates, because I had a great evening with the talker guy,
mm-hmm.
and we had a bottle of wine, and we talked, and I was like, wow, I really want to end this evening by sleeping with this guy. We
uh-huh.
we need to have sex to finish uh-huh. this in a good way.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, but I can't do that, because he's not that role. But then I was like saying to myself, well, I invented this system, and if he wants to sleep with me and I want to sleep with him, then of course we can do it.
Uh-huh.
And then I did it.
Uh-huh.
And that was interesting also for me to kind of figure out, okay, But what does that make me? Am I then a slut? Mm-hmm. Or does it make it an open relationship because I'm actually, you know, is this polyamory because I have more than one partner?
Mm-hmm.
And then I said to myself, well, you know, stay true to yourself, be honest and direct in a considerate way so that these men could check in and out of the relationship.
And what did the honesty look like? So what would you tell the sex partner that you had sex with the talking guy? How did the honesty look?
Well, if he asked, I would.
Mm-hmm. Don't ask,
but
don't
if he
tell.
Didn't, if he didn't ask, then we weren't talking about that. Because I also found that one of the sex partners, you know, I sort of fell in love with him, and I thought he was just fantastic. And I found that when he was not there, I was missing him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, well, you know, we didn't promise each other exclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
So I will have to deal with the fact that he actually leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Or otherwise, I'll have to ask him if he wants to be in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was more me putting myself out sort of at the on the line. You know, I was not hiding behind expectations or hiding behind norms or anything. I was there and present in the emotions that I had.
Did you talk to the sex guy? I mean, because it would seem absurd to think that you would have sex with someone
you didn't talk to. Right.
But the sex guy wasn't the talking guy.
Right.
So, I mean,
he wasn't the handyman. He was handyman.
It was actually quite funny. The first guy I met was we were going to have sex. Mm-hmm. You know, he entered the room and then he said, okay, can we please start by talking? Because I can't just take off my clothes like that.
Wow.
I said, sure, of course we can. You know, I mean, sex is so many, can be so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can start by just having sex if the physical attraction is really hot.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, most of the time it takes a little getting into the flow and, you know, meeting each other as people.
Okay.
So it was all different manners of starting an intimate relationship. And once a guy and I met, you know, we're going to have sex and none of us were interested. That was also quite a funny experience.
Mm.
Okay, so how do they, all right, so you put an ad out, one woman looking for three men, and three men respond. So
no, at least three men
at least
respond.
What I'm saying is the three categories of men respond.
Okay.
And in her situation, they were all jockeying for position, so to speak. They all wanted to be the one man, or they all wanted to be, or was it a situation where, I've got two different questions going on. One is, how do you interview the guy who you're just going to have sex with? How does that even look?
The interesting thing was that once I had uploaded this profile,
yes,
I kind of went offline and thinking, oh, what is the reaction going to be? Am I going to get zero answers, or are they going to think I'm out of my mind? And then 24 hours later, I got back, and there were, you know, 100 answers. And I was like, ooh, at least it attracted some attention.
Yes.
And the answers kept pouring in. So it definitely attracted attention.
Mm-hmm.
No. I'm not saying it doesn't attract attention. I'm saying in your own process. I mean, it's pretty straightforward for me that a guy who's a handyman, he knows he's a handyman. He can fix things. He's that kind of guy. He says, oh, I'll be that guy for you. But you don't have to date that guy.
Mm-hmm. You can call him and say,
call him when you need.
Washing machine's broken.
Yeah, get over here. But then you have to pay him. That's the difference.
She didn't say anything about paying.
Exactly, because they're in relationship. I'm assuming, Pauline, that you don't have to pay the guy you call to say, hey, you know, this is not working. This needs to be repaired. Can you help me out? And then the question is, so if you're dating him, you're not sleeping with him. And trust me, there are handymen out there that have women in their lives that they just come over and fix stuff. Maybe she fixes dinner. Maybe she gets him a little gift at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
There's no sexual relationship. And yet what's fueling it in the situations that I know of personally is the handyman guy is thinking there's some potential there.
Mm-hmm.
And if she keeps letting him hang around, he may be able to spend the night one time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finds out she's got a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was what happened when I started qualifying all these answers.
Okay.
You know, because a number of them, they were just saying, or quite a large number of them said, you're a lucky woman because I'm a 3-in-1. And then I said, no, you know, that's not what I'm here for.
Right,
you
right.
need to choose one of the categories in order to go on a date with me.
Mm.
And then I figured, okay, 99% of the guys are going to say, okay, let's go for the sex. But they didn't. It was only around 60% who said that.
Okay.
The rest said either you're completely off your mind, I'll never talk to you again, fine, out with you. Or I would say 30% of them, they said, well, I love to talk, so let's meet and, you know, have dinner and talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then 10% said, all right, I'm fine with starting to be your handyman.
Mm-hmm.
Starting.
And starting, you know, it was like it ended up, I found out that they all saw it as my way of qualifying them. So they had to sort of pass a test. Either they had to be show me that they were good at talking, then they would get access to the bedroom, or they were a good handyman, and then they would get access, or they were just so good looking that they could get access immediately. That's how they saw it.
Mm-hmm. But they were all qualifying to get into the bedroom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they were. And the handyman that I met with, you know, they were willing to come 3 to 4 times and help me do stuff.
Per what?
And then they wanted to know, okay, do I have a chance for something more?
Uh-huh.
And then I would look at him, and every now and then I would say, nah, not really.
Wow.
And every now and then I would say, sure, let's go ahead and try a little more.
So did you have a rule that said you had 3 men, but you only slept with one? Like, what was the let's go back for a second. You had the conversation, you had the evening with the guy who has delicious conversation, and you say, oh, the only way to round out this night properly is to spend the night together, right?
No, so to have sex.
Okay, Frank, he loves a buzzkill, right? So you have sex with him. What about him? Now you've crossed that line, and now the guy that you have awesome conversation with is now also someone you sleep with. Was he open to just having that be a one-hit wonder, and then he goes back into his talking guy cubby? Or is he now one of 2 men you sleep with?
Well, none of them were willing to go back to not sleeping together anymore.
Once they did.
So either we had to continue sleeping together and had to sleep with 2 men, you know.
She says that with some trepidation.
Or they would cut off the connection, feeling that they had not passed the test. But what I felt was that this siloing, like you were calling it, Frank, you know, having the 3 needs in different boxes, allowed me to ask, first of all, what would I like?
Mm-hmm.
Because early on, I had been very good at accommodating the guy. You know, saying, oh, what would you like? Oh, you would like that? Sure, let's start with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would think that, you know, if we'd spent 4 or 5 minutes, months actually doing what he felt like, then we would turn around and look at what I felt like doing.
Mm-hmm.
But that just never happened. You know, the men always got angry with me after 4 or 5 months because I said, oh, you were so nice in the beginning. What happened to you now? And that's when I actually wanted them to be as considerate towards me as I felt I'd been towards them.
And what were some of those things you might have asked?
I got rid of this accommodation gene in myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What might you have asked for at the 4th and 5th month?
Diamonds.
Well, then I would maybe say, okay, now we've been going to see these action movies that you really like. Could we maybe this time go and watch another type of movie?
Wow.
Or could we not once a month go out camping, but could we also go and stay in an expensive spa hotel or, you know, something that it was not necessarily what he wanted, that we could discuss it.
That seems fair.
It does, but you know what? As I'm listening to you, Pauline, what I'm hearing is that you were appealing to the man's ego in being willing to do whatever he seemed to enjoy in any particular moment.
Up front.
Up front, yeah. And so then what ends up happening is if what you're dating is the ego and you're not engaging him at other levels, then you're getting pushback from the ego that always wants to dominate and always wants to be first and never wants to have to consider you. And essentially, your initial strategy was you laid out, I'm going to appeal to your ego, and that's going to keep him coming back for however long it does. And then when you say, hey, honey, what about me? He says, what about you? You know?
Exactly. Exactly. It's a very precise description.
Yeah. You know, there's a line. There's a, and I don't say that to mean that only men do that. There's a line in one of the Sex and the City movies. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Samantha. She's been dating this young guy that she turned into a supermodel or something. And in the movie, they come to this place where it's time to end the relationship, or at least that's the way it's looking. And she says, one of them says, oh, don't you remember in the beginning when everything was wonderful and it would, and that lasted for like 5 years. And then Samantha says, yes, because it was all about me. Now it's all about you. And she wanted out. It was crazy. I said, oh my God. We've been watching this thing. Yeah. So, okay. So nobody wants to go back to not being in the bedroom once they get into the bedroom.
No.
So now, okay. So another question I have, is this a practice? Are you still doing this?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I think it's something that I recommend that especially women, but men can also do it, but especially women try for a period in their life. Mm-hmm. If they feel sort of confused or, you know, after a divorce or after not being able to find somebody that they like, allow yourself to be demanding.
I see.
Also in terms of love, because mm-hmm. it's something that our culture doesn't really urge women to be.
Right.
You know, be nice and be kind, and you know it's up to you to make things work and blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
And I say the contrary. I say, hey, think about yourself for a while, and don't think you have to continue like this. But do it for a while, because you will really learn something about your own priorities and your own patterns, and you will train dealing with men in a different manner.
You said something interesting. You said our culture, but we have different cultures. You know, Nancy and I are in the U.S. You're in Denmark. There's got to be cultural differences. So what are the similarities? Well, one of them is definitely what you just said. I mean, it sounded like you were saying it was kind of homogenous, but there've got to be some differences. So what are the similarities other than the one that you've noted? And what are some of the differences in the cultures that you're kind of talking about?
Or what are some of the similarities that make your story a universally appealing, at least interesting?
Yeah, I would say that my story is maybe not so appealing to the 20 to 30 year old Americans and Danes, whereas 35 and up in America and Denmark will be able to relate to very many elements in my story.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is more, you know, even though we are more liberal in Denmark than in the U.S., I still see that women have the social role in relationships and the keeper role in families, you know, maintenance roles and so on. It's changing, but these changes, they take a long time, because what you're brought up with also represents sort of a secure way of living.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so easy to actually break patterns.
Are you married now?
Yes, now I'm married.
And did you marry one of
them? We live a monogamous relationship.
I'm sorry, say that again. I interrupted you. Say that again.
Well, I'm married to one man, and we live in a monogamous relationship.
Okay, and was he one of the three men at one time?
No, because after a year and a half of dating three men, I fell in love with a handyman. And
I
then
see.
I was together with a handyman for 2 years, and then he had to move to another part of the country, and I couldn't go with him, so we stopped. Then I went back to my model, and then after a year or more with my model, I started evaluating, what have I actually learned from this, and does it fulfill my needs? Do I really want to continue living like this?
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out that I actually wanted to have a deep emotional relationship with one other person. And then I started dating again. And then this guy was the 10th guy I went on a date with. And we fell in love. And a year later, we married.
Nice.
What did you learn besides you wanted to have an emotional, deeper emotional relationship with one person?
Well, I learned that it was important for me not to date the ego. You know, I should look at him and I should address some of the needs that I have in a relationship and in my life. Mm-hmm. And then ask him, well, how do you feel about that? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a managing director of a company as well as a love coach, and that managing director position I had seen earlier on that was like provocative to people or to men, because it's like, ooh, you're this managing director. Yeah, I am. So, you know, I needed to check, how does he feel about me having quite a powerful position, mm-hmm. and being able to work as a love coach? Because for some people that's difficult, that you can do both. But for me, I can. So I needed to check that. And then I needed to figure out, okay, what kind of a couple's life would I actually really like? Mm-hmm. And that's very much about many details, you know, like how would I like us to have meals? Should we have a meal together each evening? Should we, or should we be more flexible? Like we now have it so that every Sunday he and I spend the Sunday together, you know, mm-hmm. from morning till night. Mm-hmm. We don't go online unless we agree to go online to look for something specific. We don't work. We don't spend time with friends. Of course, if there's a 50-year birthday, we will decide to take part in that. But, you know, it's his and my time. Mm-hmm. And yes. That's something that we have developed together, and I really appreciate that. And I don't think I would have taken myself so seriously before that I would actually have insisted that we have something that's ours, you know.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we're talking with Pauline Middleton, the author of One Woman, Three Men. Pauline, please tell us what you're up to and how we can find you.
Well, actually, presently, I'm working with a scriptwriter in Hollywood to make a TV series based on my book.
Nice,
yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's really exciting, because that makes me revisit all the areas again and, you know, choose whatever is the best to create the good loving characters that we just want to continue to follow. Mm-hmm.
And so, the dating coach, how does one get in on the dating coach piece?
Yeah, well, I have a website called modernloveandsex.com. That's modernloveandsex.com. And there, you know, I do online sessions, or I do, whenever I come to the States, 2-3 times a year, I also do personal meetings with people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can read more about that and contact me there. Mm.
Who paid for parts with the handyman? You know, often this feels like a man's question.
Oh, yeah, it is.
So, you know, when you go to get your car fixed, or when you got a issue at home, your washing machine's broken, there's the service part, and then there's the parts that have to be purchased in order for the serviceman to do to fix the issue. Who paid for the parts?
I did, of course. Mm-hmm. It was my washing machine or my whatever. Mm-hmm. What was great for me was that he went and got the right parts, because I couldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How did you pick the sex guy?
Well, I decided that I would look into his picture. And then if I felt, okay, he looks good, then I would have 2 or 3 email exchanges with him, and then we would set up a drink date lasting only 1 hour, like from 5 to 6, going for a drink or a cup of coffee or something.
Uh-huh.
Because if you only have a 1 hour date with something you need to do afterwards, you know, then you can leave each other in a nice manner.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if you set up a whole evening and you start the evening by looking at each other and thinking, what am I ever going to talk to this one about? Then there's like, you know, that's too bad and not necessary.
It can get drawn out.
Start with just 1 hour date.
Yeah.
And then you can always prolong it, you know, if you're having a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could just continue speaking and having dinner and whatever. But it's more difficult to leave if you're not having a good time. And he is.
And he is. I love it.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel
and
jealous?
Then I took the liberty of saying, no, I'm not interested. You know, I wasn't forcing myself into anything, because I didn't feel I had promised in anything except having a 1 hour drink date.
Right.
And that was also important for me at the time.
And did you ever say, okay, All right, 5 to 6. It's 6 o'clock. Let's go. Let's go home.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
But only if I really felt like it. Mm-hmm. You know, don't ever go on a sex date with somebody where it's like, oh, I guess that's going to be fine. No, it's not. Trust me. You know, I did that once, and I was completely cured. You know, you really need to feel like, oh, this is a hot guy. You know, I like him. Mm-hmm. He's attractive. Or, you know, mate, it doesn't have to be like a model beauty or anything. It's more the personality. But if there's nothing in the personality that really makes it necessary to have sex, just don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no need to force yourself to something that has a risk of ending badly.
Did you ever feel jealousy, or did any of the guys feel jealousy? You said that they were competitive, but I guess there would be probably some jealousy in just being competitive. But how did that play out, the jealousy piece?
Well, one guy I remember, he was like already at the you know, writing to each other level on the dating side. He was jealous of the other guys. So I said to him, you know, we're not even going to meet because I don't think you're going to be able to handle this. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, sure, sure, no problem, no problem. And I was like, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, and whenever I was in doubt, I would say to the guy, can we call each other and talk on the phone? Mm-hmm. Because if you cannot kind of evaluate a person based on their emails, you get a lot from talking with them on the phone.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, you know, there was this great guy. He looked great, and we had fun emails, and something still made me think, oh, I need to check him a second time. And then I called him up, and then he had the most ugly language. You know, it was like, yeah, well, you know, I can't even make it in English because he was Danish, of course.
Uh-huh.
But it was just, it turned me off completely.
Yeah.
His voice and the way of talking was just, I couldn't go out and spend time with this guy. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, you know, I'm sorry, it's not going to work. Some of the other guys, they got to be jealous when I started dating them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, one guy said, well, I can't do this. You know, we'd been on 2 dates and he was a talker guy and he just couldn't go spend time talking with me because he was all the time thinking about these other guys. I was like, well, you know, don't worry about that.
Right.
And I also got jealous once with this lover that I got emotionally attached to. But, you know, I also had to take my own medicine. So I said to myself, okay. Well, you know, this is not, we're not, he was not really looking for a steady relationship, and I knew that, so I just had to, what I did was I said to myself, okay, I'll try to really enjoy the time that we spend together
mm-hmm.
and not think about him outside of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a little related to the Byron Katie we talked about in the beginning,
right.
You know. Jealousy can be very much about thinking, oh, what is he doing now? Who is he with now?
Mm-hmm.
And he may be just sitting in the bank having a really boring meeting.
Yeah.
But you can work yourself up in your head thinking that he's out with some hot woman that he loves much more than you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a complete, you know, construction in your head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just don't. Focus on what you have and what you do when you're together. Leave the rest. Otherwise, you become a prisoner of your own jealousy.
Yeah. How much sex each week was enough?
Oh, that changed very much. You know, I had some very active weeks with sex 2 and 3 times a week, and I had 3-4 weeks where with no sex at all.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know, 30 days?
I could kind of turn up and down how much activity there was. And that was also a luxury for me that I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever try the 30-day sex date?
No.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
She was looking for.
All right. Okay.
Interestingly enough, I had women get angry with me, saying, "Oh, I think you're using men." And I
really?
Said, "Well, I can't see that. You know, I present my model to them, and they are free to say yes or no."
Right.
Yeah, but I still think you're using them.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. I mean, you could have said, yeah, you're right. I'm upfront about using them. They're using me. We're using each other. That's a relationship. Yeah, everybody. We're relating to one another's needs and preferences and desires and all of that good stuff.
I got
to
ask you one more thing before we go. And that is, I saw this movie, Mr. Holmes. And at the end of the movie, he talked about this one case he never solved. And the line he used was...
What's the movie about? Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes. He's retired. It's at the end of his life. He's ended his career on this one case he had never solved.
Okay.
So he says at one point, I got the facts, but I missed the truth. Something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking at some of the questions that, like, on your website, you suggest people ask themselves and their partners before they go forward, and even questions you asked yourself throughout this process. And I'm curious about what you learned. Like, you had the facts about what you thought you wanted, and what you learned about yourself that you weren't expecting to learn. Like, what was the surprise?
My biggest surprise was how good I had been at postponing my own needs.
Okay.
So it's actually back to this ego thing. I was able to actually postpone my own needs and convincing myself that it was the common good, that I should not be in there with my needs, you know. It would be good to that he got the space, because in that way he liked me.
Got it.
And you know, but that's just not the way. You can never develop a deep emotional relationship with somebody if there is this imbalance. And then the consequence of that is that I should find out what I want, and then I should ask my partner for it. And that's the second insight I got. I was like, wow, this is much more challenging than I thought. Because one thing is finding out you want something. Another thing is to actually ask somebody, because they may say, no, I don't want to give that to you.
Right.
Or, nah, that's not interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, you put yourself much more on the forefront of things than just hiding behind expectations.
Along the day's journey. Well, hold on. Before we do that, what you call modern love, what is modern love?
Modern love is asking yourself what is important for you in your love life. And I urge people to define many different things, you know, big things, small things, a little like when I did my list there, you know, write everything down or draw it or whichever way you want to kind of become more conscious about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you have all of that, then start prioritizing what is the three most important things for you right now. And the reason why it has to be three is that it doesn't make sense to define 10 things that are important, because that is just a recipe for getting constantly disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you have three things and you communicate that to a partner or to possible partners, then you will be able to actually also know once you have gotten one of those three things. It may be three different things in 5 years, but, you know, keep focusing what is important, communicate it in a nice, considerate way, and say, hey, I did this. Now we're ready to move on to something else.
I really appreciate the clarity that you're talking about. It's refreshing.
It's getting scientific about your romantic life, about your relationship life.
Hmm.
Yeah, and many people say you can't be that because emotions, you know, you cannot explain it, and they're not consistent and so on. And I think that's a mistake. Mm-hmm. They are, actually. We just have never learned how to analyze them and look at them and know ourselves and see through ourselves and so on. Mm-hmm. So I think it is possible, not 100%, but maybe 90%, and then there's space for happiness and joy to reach you for the last 10%.
Nice.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been talking with Pauline Middleton, the author of One Woman, Three Men. One more time, Pauline, please tell us what you're up to and how we can find you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me, Frank and Nancy. It's been great talking with you. And you can all find more about my book, One Woman, Three Men, on my website, which is called modernloveandsex.com. Mm-hmm. That's modernloveandsex.com, all in letters.
Along today's journey, we've discussed a litany of things. Keeping the kids out of adult conversations, the dynamics that come from siloing, and what Pauline learned about herself along the way of this experiment, shall we call it. Thank you to my co-host, Nancy. Thanks to Jeff Newman, my engineer. And thank you to my guest, Pauline Middleton. You've been great.
Thank you.
You bet. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had hanging out with today's ensemble. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr. That's M-R Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, make sure you like us there, and if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.